I'm going to try and do a podcast here, see how it works on this new mic. We shall see. And I promised I'd do a podcast. It's been a while. I've been busy. I've had some things to deal with. I apologize to all of you for that. And it's getting to be fall. It's getting to be fall here. Enjoying the autumn leaves. Of what there is. We kind of hit this strange dichotomy that we're not getting the beautiful leaves, we're just getting the cold weather. And it just hit all at once. Like one day I'm literally out on my kayak having fun, and next day it's raining, it's snowing. So, looking at my notes here, I'm kind of keeping a brief outline. Really loving this pen that I picked up. It's a Kaweco Perkeko, whatever it's called. And I love these German nibs. So I've been doing this outline, and I'm going to stick roughly to it. Roughly going to stick to it. And do a podcast of a couple of different things. Things that have been on my mind, you know. The autumn leaves are changing. It's getting colder out. There's more time to be inside. As a writer, that means there's more time for me to work on a lot of these things that I've wanted to work on. The success and the rate of, not so much sales, I don't care about sales, but the success and the rate of appreciation I've had for my book, Your Alpha Wolf, my latest book that just came out, has been overwhelming. I want to thank all of you for it. I'm sending out some merchandise to some of you that you'll be getting in the mail. Of course, stickers for now. The shirts, I got a few of them in. They're pretty nice, but it's the cover of that book is something that when I first made it, and wanted it to be done and said how I wanted it to be done, it was something I've been working on for a number of years. It's a little edgier. You have it based a lot of ways on the Shadow, which is a superhero that my father liked. And I'm wearing this bandana with this wolf face all year during this pandemic. And just this great photo. And I said, hey, I want this on the book cover. Do some fancy artwork with it, and they made it out to look like it. I don't know. It's pretty cool. It's like a fiery face. It's my face. It's my eyes, but it's really not me. It's very primal. It's very survival. It's great. And the stories and the poems of it are of I ran the Wolfpack Conservation Society for over 20 years, and a lot of the poems are about people that I knew that were in the group, people that were friends of mine, things that we did. Many of them have passed on. Some of them have not. Some of them are still alive or left the group. And of course, I still think very dearly, warm feelings for every one of them. Still doing that in kind of a way. Everybody's kind of gone their own way. Social media kind of killed a lot of what that was. In a lot of ways. Some of my friends became famous authors. Some police officers, you name it. But I wanted the book to talk about something very dear to me. And that's that subject of that kind of belief system, which really came from being a member of a Native American tribe and saying to people, hey, you know, we're all going to be real on here. And we're going to protect each other and be good to each other and stand up for different issues, which at that time in my life was a pretty, I can't imagine we all did that. We all pulled it off. It was pretty great. But the story goes on about, you have to read it. A lot of it is about a girl that I had great feelings for, and we're not as close. In very different stages of our lives. You realize that in life, you go through different stages and different levels of friendship. that is about her. A lot of it's about her. So, I'm really excited how the outpouring has been from that, especially when we're in the middle of a pandemic. If you have the funds like Taylor Swift and studio, you can put out an amazing album like she did on her own, raw, without all that fluff that's in it. But for most of us right now, like right now I'm working on this new microphone. I don't even know if you're going to be able to listen to this, but it's been a challenge. And especially as a writer, it's been a challenge to have a lot of these books going from the production floor, getting the proofs, all these different things that normally would be very simple are now just slowed down and made more complicated. So it was probably one of the most difficult books that I've ever had to try to make, but the one I really enjoyed probably the most. The whole time last year, I had a really bizarre situation happen to me. And start off with that. This is going to go backward because I want to talk later about what last week. But right here, when I dropped my great aunt off, dropped her off, she was staying with us, and I'll get to that later. I'm in the middle of nowhere. I'm literally in the middle of nowhere, stopping at this place that's a farmer's market that. I mean, you can't get a cell phone signal out there. And I'm standing there and I go to use my phone and I have a voicemail. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna check out what this voicemail was. And this began the process of this, the story I'm gonna tell you that I don't get upset about very many things. I want to tell you that right now. I'm a very easygoing person. I'm somebody I just I have a degree in psychology. And I look at people. My dad was district supervisor of household finance and GE credit. He was more business side. So yeah, I want things run properly. Okay, I know my rights. I have friends that work in the military. I have friends that have been in the Pentagon. I've been a 9/11 ambassador. I've done all that. So it takes a lot to make me upset. In fact, last year. And I'm not going to mention the situation or the person's name because I had someone literally stalking me because I'm a writer, because I'd been in a business situation with them that decided that they were going to stalk me and try to extort things from me and try to terrify me. And it was such a bizarre situation for me because, number one, there's normal limits on what people will do. Like, there's people that will realize that if you do this and this and this, you're going to go to jail. But then there's people that don't have that limit and they keep going further and further and they get up in that zone of where it's really out there. And this individual had been way out there. And I finally just said, they were. I guess jealous of me as a writer. That's the only way I can understand it. And I'd gone to the authorities about it. I've been dealt with being the stalking of it, the whole thing, the whole year. And I felt, I did absolutely nothing wrong in this situation. Okay. I was a victim of a crime. And I finally just said, look, I'm not going to press charges. I'm not going to go through the federal government for what this whole situation was. I want left alone and don't want to deal with it. Because what I wound up having was a lot of pity for the individual. This is an individual that I would consider, and this is a lot me saying this, because I went through a whole year not being able to talk about it. This individual I had a lot of respect for, a huge amount of respect for. Very intellectual person that when I was growing up, was one of those people in the area where I lived, I looked up to as that person on that pinnacle around this area. And to go from where you deeply admire somebody to where they're almost trying to kill you is terrifying. And you realize that's all it is somebody trying to terrorize you out of whatever reason. So what I learned to really have is a lot of compassion and pity on a person. And I thought, well, you obviously want to make this a big situation. I don't. And I said very kindly, could you please do your thing? I'll do my thing, and go that way, I'll go that way. So I'm not a very vindictive person. I'm not somebody that gets mad. I didn't get mad over that. I was just a little confused. I was beside myself. I was extremely disappointed in the individual because, like I said, you grew up greatly admiring someone. And as a teacher, I should put it that way. And you see when somebody's starting to lose it, and it's... It was really a sad thing. So I'm not somebody who gets mad. That's a situation that was grinding on me all last year and was meant to. The person did it in a way that meant to try to do that to me. No anger, no bad feelings, nothing. I feel absolutely nothing towards that person. I wouldn't even care anymore, okay? I learned one thing in life that you have a choice how you feel about something. If you internalize it, if you let them make you mad, if you let them, their behavior influence who you are. They've done that, you know. And I don't, and there's obviously times you can't in life avoid that. But for the most part, I avoided everything about it because there's nothing about that individual. Me over the past 20 years plus being a writer, working where I work, doing the things I've done, that person should have any opinion on me of. And, we had one encounter that was a business arrangement, and that was about it, okay? So I look at business as being a different aspect of that. Business is a little different, you know? There's laws, there's ethics, there's all kinds of guidelines. So what did make me mad was this week. Going back to saying I'm not a hothead, I'm not somebody who gets mad, I'm at this fruit market, and I go to pick up my phone. I go, wow, I got a voicemail. I must have been out of service or something. And I look, and no matter what number I dial on my phone, I don't have data. I don't have anything. So all it goes is to AT&T's customer service number. And I'm thinking, what happened? You know, did my phone break? Did something happen? And I get this guy, I can barely hear him. He's telling me that they locked my account. I'm thinking, okay, you locked my account. And I'm asking him, I'm like, why? I have always paid my bill on time. I've been with AT&T since 98. 1998, I got their service because I was going to college. I was young. And I wanted something in case I ever got in a wreck, which did happen. And thank God, after that wreck, I was smart enough to get a phone because it was middle of the winter, black ice, car pile up, awful thing. And I've had this service ever since, and I've loved it. I've always loved AT&T. I get service with them, I don't get anywhere else. So that part, it's a wonderful thing. But I'm like, why is my account locked? This has not happened in 20 years, okay? They're telling me about this 3G sunset, that they're going to be doing away with 3G. And I said, well, I have a phone that's getting 4G, so I don't know what the problem would be. And the gentleman said, oh, no, it's not getting 4G. You have to take it out. Take it. I'll turn your account back on, but you have to get another phone. And my initial reaction to that, first of all, is that did my phone get hacked? Is this a scam? How did this even happen? Because, like I said, this has never happened in the whole history of AT&T, you being a customer. And the guy's rambling on about something. He's going to send me a phone for free, brand new one. And I'm like, okay, buddy, okay. And I'm just letting him talk. And he said it was an S10, and he's going on, and guaranteed it's brand new. And he turns my phone back on. So I'm sitting there. In the meantime, the people I was with went and did what they wanted to do. I'm kind of just standing there dumbfounded. And I pick up the phone and I'm like, you won't believe what just happened to me. Like, I just had my phone shut off. What if I'd been in a situation, driving, got an accident, got lost somewhere, had an emergency phone call to me? What if my publisher had called me? All these different things, my job. They had no way of contacting me, which, it doesn't bother me, but there's a lot of people that would bother very much. And the more I thought about it, the more it upset me. And I'm thinking, wow, that wasn't always that great of a situation. So I get back home, and 10 minutes later, I get this email, this confirmation, and I'm going to be getting this S9 upgrade. And I'm like, S9? S9. So I said, I never agreed to this. I never agreed to that. So I call the number up. And I called like three different numbers. It was customer service, it was tech support, and it was this sunset number. So I'm talking to them, and I said, well, this guy said an S10. There's the S10, there's the S20 out, there's various different models. Why would I want to go back to the same phone I really have right now that isn't an upgrade for me? What's going on here? And they said, well, that was our mistake, but we can't cancel it because you used up your upgrade. And I said, no, I didn't. I didn't agree to anything. I didn't sign anything, nothing. And they couldn't even look up the confirmation number when I had it. So this went on for a couple of days, and I called the next day, and I got a different story. The guy said to me, he says, well, your SIM card might be not 4G. So I went up to the store, lo local one. I was of course very upset, okay, about this. And I looked at the guy, and it's not his fault. And I said, look, I'm mad about this. It's not your fault, but I'll tell you the story. Told him the whole thing. Picks up my phone. He says, you're getting 4G. In fact, you're getting 5G. And he says, there's nothing wrong with your SIM card. He says, nothing wrong with your phone. He says, this is going to be fine. He pulled out a thing and showed me the phones that they're going to be supporting. And it went clear back to like S6. And I said, well, what was this about? And he just kind of started laughing. And he's like, well, yeah, they got rid of a phone. And I'm like, wow, like I know it happens. I understand that. And I said, well, he said, well, keep it as a spare, but you lost your upgrade. He says, you normally we would give you a discount on that upgrade, but now that's gone. He says, they did away with that. He says, so they killed two birds with one stone, basically. And he literally said to me, he says, well, what do you want me to do? He says, there's nothing I can do. Your phone works. He said, it's all with them. And he says, I'm sitting here, and he says, I'd have to call them too. So I started looking on social media. Looking on Twitter mainly and saying, wow, a lot of people are going through this. And I posted a comment like what I dealt with. I said, how is this legal? How is this legal? And this guy kept wanting me to call him, private message me from AT&T. And I said, look, buddy, I'm not calling you at your extension. And then I tried to, and I couldn't get through to him. And I said, well, this is waste of my time, a total waste of my time. And I went off this weekend and did something. Well, last weekend did something, got away. And they're begging me the whole time, please, please call us. We'll fix this. We'll fix this. We'll fix this for you. This shouldn't have been done to you. This shouldn't have happened. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. So then I see the phone shipped. And obviously there was an order, that went through. I contact this woman yesterday. She finally gets a hold of me. We're talking, and it's going to be delivered today, this phone. And I said, look, I didn't want an S9. I was supposed to get the S10. The guy changed it on me. You're hiring people out to do this, and they're not doing it properly. They're in some other country. Nothing against them. That's great. Wonderful people out there. But there's a privacy concern there, Okay, I don't know who I'm giving my information to. And then the second of all being that the guy just scammed me, okay? And she said to me, she says, when you get the phone tomorrow, she says, go up to the store. Tell them you want to trade in. Trade it in for an S10. You're not going to get the S20. And I said, well, yeah, obviously. She's put, trade it in for the S10. Tell them about it. And we got off the phone, and she sent me a copy of the return policy. And she said, I said to her, I said, how am I going to know to tell them, hey, I talked to you. I need something in writing that says, I spoke to you, you authorized this. And she said, well, let them read this or take a screenshot. And she said, it'd be more than enough for them to give you the phone they were supposed to give you instead of this. So I get the phone in the mail, and FedEx delivers on Sunday. My blood pressure went from 1 to like 100 because I'm looking, and it's supposed to be a brand new phone. It's supposed to be an S10, brand new. And it's an S9 that's refurbished. Refurbished phone. And I'm thinking, wow. You know, I got to speak out about this. This isn't something I'm just going to take lightly. This could happen to a lot of people. There's a lot of vulnerable people right now. A lot of vulnerable people. And I'm not looking for something for free. I even told them, you know, if you can't honor that, just give me back my upgrade. And I will upgrade to the S20. Normally, you know, I'd go from having to pay, I think it's going for $700 right now. I could probably get it for like $400. I'd be happy with that. I'd be totally happy with that. But I don't want this refurbished S9. It has no use to me. If you want to do something with it and you really want to get rid of these phones you have in your inventory, take them up to the military. Donate them to the military, to some of these soldiers that are overseas and different things like that. That's what you do with them, okay? You don't give them to people telling you you're going to get a new phone and you get this refurbished phone that's 6 years old. So I had it in writing I was going to get this taken care of. And I get up there and that's the first time I've been in the mall in a year and a half. Okay. I was so upset I didn't care about the pandemic. Had my mask on, but I'm up there and I'm just like, hey, I told them the story. The guy looks at me and he looks through what the woman wrote, the authorization, and he goes, I can't do that. He goes, there's no receipt that you bought this from them and all this and that. And I'm like, look, I have the order confirmation in my email. Let him see it. I'm like, I have this, this, and this. And I said, it says, this woman says, if I bring this here, you're going to give me this S10 in replacement for it. And normally they would expect me to maybe, I think it's like a couple dollars more, but I said, with all I've been through, they said that, hey, you know, we shouldn't have done this to you. This was somebody that scammed you. We're sorry about that. And he wouldn't do it. He's like, no. He's like, I'm not doing that. And he said, let me see your phone. And he typed right onto my Twitter in response to them, look, I don't honor this. I'm corporate, and exactly what he said to me. So I literally had a supervisor at the main AT&T, and this guy saying, no, I'm not doing it. And I just looked at him, and I go, you know, what am I supposed to do with this thing? And he said, hey, he said, sell it, make money on it. He says, buy yourself an S10. And I'm like, you don't know. No, I'm not doing that. That's really upsetting to me. You hawk off your junk to me, and I tell you I don't want it. It's unsolicited. You're sending me this junk phone. You're not allowing me to even cancel the order. You're burning up my upgrade, and you're giving me an obsolete phone. And I says, you know, why don't I just go to another company? I know I could get like an iPhone 13 or something. For free. And he's just like looked at me and he's like, well, so I said, here's my card. And I wrote down the number of the woman I'd spoken to and her extension. And I said, look, you need to look into this. And I'll look into it on my end. And he obviously didn't care. He didn't give two shits. And I came home and called. And I sat there calling tech support. Oh, by the way, just to return the phone or anything, there was a $50 restocking fee. Okay, so you send me this phone that I didn't want. That's not the upgrade I wanted. That's a refurbished one. And I want a $50 up. They want me to pay $50 for them to take it back. Okay? So I called and told tech support net about it. And they said, well, here's a number to call. We want you to go in there and give this guy this number and tell him that. And I says, you sent me a refurbished phone. And they said, no, we didn't. And I said, yeah. Well, how do you know it's refurbished? I said, did you ever think it says it on the box and on a packing slip? And they said, well, what packing slip? And I said, well, at the bottom of the box, underneath it all, it shows that it's refurbished. And they go, oh, well. And I said, you realize by doing that, that's against the law. And they're like, well, to go back and have him called, it's not going to matter. You know, I'm taking the phone, throw it in a dumpster. Don't want it. We'll go to another phone company, get a new phone, keep my number. Won't mean 2 seconds of not having service. 20 years I was their customer, all because this guy wanted to make a sale that they hired on. It wasn't even a full timer. It's one of the many problems with AT&T that people are complaining about. I'm not saying anything bad about these people. I'm not saying anything bad about the company. I've loved them for years. I've had AT&T. Don't get me wrong on that. Their excuses, you know, I'm sending you a free phone that's refurbished and I'm going to burn up your upgrade after 20 years of being a customer. That is not a good business practice. That makes me mad because of the hassle I'm going through and seeing other people go through. To where in this day and age, a phone is an essential thing if you're traveling. So that was really, really just wanted to do that as part of this podcast and tell people about it so everybody knows what's going on. And if you get the phone that's refurbished, return it. You know, call them up and demand that they send you a shipping label. Don't pay them the $50 to take it back. Why should you pay $50 so this guy can get a commission to send you a phone? Doesn't make any sense. Better yet, just switch phone companies. Been on for 28 minutes about that. How do you like that? What I was saying about my great aunt, you know, here's a woman that she was staying with us for a few weeks. I was trying to help her out. She had this beautiful farm up on White Horse Mountain. It had been in her family her husband's family for generations. And I always loved it. We'd go up there when I was a kid and there was a pond. This little pond, it was down through the field. And there were frogs in it. And there were fish, and it was paradise. A big maple tree. Growing up, it was always, she'd have her grandkids, Eric and Laura and Scott, they'd be up there a lot. And it was, when I knew they were in town, it was so exciting for me. And she's 95, going to be 96, my great aunt. And she came upon some rough times, put it that way, and she had to sell the farm. The whole idea of the old spring house, where you just go over and get water. It was all that land and all to be sold. And it broke my heart. I wish I had the money to put up front just to buy it off her. I didn't even know it was being sold. And next thing I knew, I went to the family reunion and she was living down North Carolina with her daughter. Her daughter was good friends with Dale Earnhardt's mother and the Earnhardt family. So the part of North Carolina is just beautiful this time of year, in the summer. And she's gonna stay down there, but I guess she kind of got homesick for her great grandkids that live up here that she raised, all those memories. And she stayed here with us, and I was excited about it, and I still am. My grandmother's sister, I get to talk to this woman a little bit here and there, and the whole time, the past month, it's been a blur to me because I've just been sitting there with a pen and paper talking and taking down notes on all this, not just wisdom, but family history and history in her family, her buried family, history of some of the not so great things about my great grandfather. He was not a very good person, but history's there. And going through a lot of my own grandmother's pictures, got to have her sit down and write the names of the people. So this was valuable time that normally I'd get a few minutes here and there, but I got a month of just spending with this woman. And I got her interested in a few things she didn't know about. I showed her how these new pens are made, these new fountain pens. Got her interested in a lot of things on YouTube. We were watching things about the historical, and I was showing her about it. I'm like, you're not into the phones and that. She has a flip phone she can barely figure out, which isn't her fault. But I said, this is so phenomenal. I said, just in my lifetime, the amount of information and podcasts and things like that, I loved every minute of spending and talking to her, and trying to get her a place. Was daunting, shall we say, very daunting. She didn't have all of her personal belongings with her, so trying to get her an apartment was tricky. I wound up running around a lot, just trying to get information, talking to different representatives, trying to help her out. And I finally did get her a place. So it was, well, I didn't. I took her to her great grandkids, and they had an idea of something, and it worked out very well for her. And I'm kind of laughing at her. I'm like, you're 95 years old and you're getting an apartment. And you're healthy as a horse. Just wonderful, wonderful to spend time with her. Some of the history I know that she doesn't know. So you can learn a lot from these older people just being around them. And my family, my mother's side, she's the last one left. So I'm hearing stories about her aunts and uncles and people in the 1800s that she knew. She wasn't alive in the 1800s, but when she was younger, she knew these people. And you're getting a bit of history that in a 95-year-old lifetime spans beyond that. It spans back to about 1870, 1860 in the family history. Different stories about different people. I could figure a lot out because a lot of these trees, these family trees, are hard to draw on paper, but when you go to put them on, I have a program I can put it on, and it kind of makes it visual and stores it where I can never draw it out on paper that way. And put a lot of it down and figured it out and wrote it down in a way that worked very efficiently. So it's pretty exciting to see the family tree going from her to her great great grandkids and their families that I added in that doesn't even apply to mine, that was never recorded, clear out to her great grandparents. So you're looking at, what are we looking at? great great grandkids, you're looking at five generations. And then four generations beyond that. So actually, I'm looking at nine generations of a family tree and history of it. Writing all this down like a madman with my pen and trying to make sense of it and asking questions. And I loved it. I loved that whole week, the whole month of doing that. You would have all, I think, enjoyed it. And what it made me think about here, what it really made me think about is, man, I think everybody has someone in their family like that. I know, I mentioned a girl that my book was basically written about, written towards. You know, she was in my group, the Wolf Pack. And we had a falling out. It wasn't necessarily my problem or hers. It really wasn't. We'd kind of outgrown each other. And I consider her, they say you meet five people in your life, you know, being your parents being one of them, and different people, guys in your life. But and of course there's your first love, but this girl here was kind of like someone I deeply care about. But was more of a younger chick version of my temper, and I couldn't help but just adore the. I couldn't just. I adored the hell out of this girl. I really did, and we got extremely, extremely close. We outgrew each other. It wasn't our fault. Somebody tried to put a wedge between us. It worked because people can do that very easily when you're young. They'll target your insecurities. But I never hated this girl, even though we kind of had an argument. I was like, well, there's no reason for me to hate this girl. This is one of the people I love with all my heart and soul. And I'm not afraid to say that. She just recently got married. I'm very glad she did. I'm glad she's happy. Wonderful human being, one of the very best. This book was kind of dealing with her in a way, because I always had, you know, a couple main people in the Wolf Pack. One being my friend Diane Robinson that passed away recently, and all the people I met through her that got involved. And then there was the whole people that really had my back, Nikki Williams in Kansas City, and then this other girl lived around there. And I met her through them. So, but it was like a core of people that I could, you know, these are people I have no problem going to. If I got in a car and needed a place to stay, they'd be there for me. I same way back, they needed a place. Wonderful. It's like this pin cap. We were tight. Worst metaphor. But, you know, these are people I trusted with my life and still do. But you have falling out and things are never the same. People grow. But I remember she had a grandmother that had passed away, and she was telling me stories about it and different things. And remember saying to her at the time, you know, I never knew my dad's dad. I only knew my dad's mom. I knew my other two grandparents, but never knew any of my great grandparents, never knew any of that. And I believe she had. I don't remember what it was, but it was fascinating talking to her and seeing what more she knew about her family than I did about mine. And saying that, hey, everybody has these older people in your life. When you're younger, you don't think too much about it, but as you get older, you want to know the history of those things, because once they're gone, you don't have anybody to ask the questions like, what does this mean? Why was this done this way? Why was this recipe this way? Or why was this any little detail? And of course, friendships are like that too. You lose a friend like our friendship went wavering. I'm left with what this past book I wrote is about. And it's about, paralleled to me, in some parts about her and other people, but there's one in there, the last poem is about her, but there's one in there that's capturing the idea of when I drove through the Midwest, these beautiful yellow, golden, like mini sunflowers, I don't know what they're called. Beautiful. And that type of poetry. The power of poetry is in what you capture. That's what's the most important thing. That's why I didn't lash out at the gentleman that gave me a hard time. Wanted to destroy me. Was an author too. Because, you know, the power of my writing will be read years after I'm gone. Not bragging about it, but it will. And it's just like the little known poet from where my grandmother came from, that Gideon Kinsports, where I went to his grave this year, his 200th birthday, and read that poem he had about Eliza. And I give him a little mention in there too. Even I never met this man, never met him at all, but he read a poem and a letter that just deeply touched me, and I thought, wow. And I'd seen the name before. When I came across this letter, I'd seen the name. And I thought, wow, that's powerful. This guy wrote this in the 1840s. And I can read it now, and very few things, nobody's alive from that time, but those words were as crisp and as feeling and emotive as if they'd been written yesterday. The power of good poetry. It's not about the merchandise. It's not about your fame. It's not about how much money you got in the bank, what you can take from people. It's about something different right there. It's about that history. It's about that turn beyond that, you know. When you think beyond your own human needs and those creature comforts. Take, for instance, you know, I've mentioned before, Willie Nelson and other musicians and people. The value of their music is in the spoken word that's recorded, the poetry in it. You can go to a concert, you can buy a hat, you can buy a shirt, you can buy a bandana. Why do you do that? Is it because they're a god? No. And Willie, what I love about Will, Willie's not like it at all. Willie is somebody that, like myself, like Jack Kerouac, like Walt Whitman, like countless other people, have written something that is able to be felt by the human soul and speaks to it. And so many of those songs were poems that people have read. And I mentioned all those people. Lives beyond their work because what they are tapping into is the truth of humanity. Why are we here? It's not about the money in the bank, all the other garbage. It's about the power of that connection with another person. Where here's like that poem Gideon wrote, 180 years ago. He's gone. There's nothing left. You know, he's dead. He's been dead for a long time. There's nobody left that knew him. There's a few books that might mention him. He died young. He had some disease. I don't know. Nobody even knows who Eliza was. Like, you can't find out who Eliza was. I tried looking that up just for history, but the power of those words live. What could you write on stone? You know, tombstones don't hold up. I can barely even read his. You write on paper, and words are copied and put in books and published. You feel good that they're published. You get to, wow, this is my book. But more importantly, somebody has to read it. And if it sits on a bookshelf in a library and nobody ever reads it, it's of no purpose. But if it's red and you're speaking to something that's powerful, that's human, and your heart's in the right place and how you do it, you're speaking the same language the other people speak to themselves. That's what it is. You're speaking the language that other people speak to themselves. Because what they internalize are those words, because they felt them. They felt them. That's why somebody can sing a song that sounds so much better if they're the guy that wrote it. That's why that is. Speaking of the Nelsons, and you know, I just love them because they're good people. They've always been nice to me. They're great musicians, great artists, pure heart. Enough of me saying how great they are, but Raylan, look at any Raylan songs, man. Look at some of her history. Look her up. You want a modern young lady that has a lot of talent? Look up Raylan Nelson or any of these people. What their music is speaking to is that. So to sum all this up, what does that mean to me? Why am I going this whole arc? I'm not even following my notes. I look at my great aunt and I see the big picture. What does that mean? Most people will see Nana, the 95-year-old. But look into history. I can go all the way back to where she was a young girl, to where she first got married and had a kid, and her father annulled the marriage, changed the kid's name, and she had other kids. And her daughters and her son went off to Vietnam, and all these different stories of this woman's life. How she built a barn. Her and her brother built a barn, and she goes to this farmer's place the other year. She pulls in with her car, and she's standing there looking at this barn. This farmer goes, "Can I help you, ma'am?" She goes, "Yeah." She starts walking up to him. He goes, "Whoa, what are you doing? That's my barn." She's like hell, it's your barn. She says, "I built it. My brother and I built that one summer." And he says, "You built my barn?" She says, "Yeah." He says, "That would have been back in the 1930s. Late 1930s. She goes, "Yep. The whole summer I did that." And he goes, "Wow, can I shake your hand?" That's the kind of fun. You were getting a young girl up to the older woman that she was just telling the story. And she doesn't act her age. So for 95, I've learned a lot of wisdom that way from people. And I want to leave with this on the wisdom of Dorothy Groft, my great aunt, that you're only as old as you feel, and how you react to things, and you're only able to be put in a place if you allow people to put you there. I often refer to the wisdom of Nelson Mandela and many other people that were in awful situations, had no control over anything in their lives, but in their mind they had a sanctuary. They knew who they were. They knew their power, the power of their words, their voice. They knew their own story. Great Russian proverb. My grandfather on my dad's side would say, "Know yourself." So, I leave you with that, and it was great having a podcast again. It's been a while. I hope you all are doing well. The weather's getting colder, and we're still in the midst of this, so stay safe out there, and I love you all. Thank you.